Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Tuesday, June 30th. I'm Taylor Heckert. The Alaska Supreme Court says Dan J. Sullivan must be included on the ballot for Alaska's U.S. Senate seat and told the Division of Elections to decide how the challenger's name will appear. Sullivan is a retired teacher from Petersburg. He shares a name and shows the same party affiliation as the Republican incumbent, Senator Dan Sullivan. The Division of Elections kicked him off the ballot because, it said, his aim was to confuse voters. But during oral arguments yesterday morning, the justices repeatedly returned to the idea that the division could just differentiate the two candidates with, for example, middle initials. Chief Justice Susan Carney questioned whether the division had to go as far as disqualifying the candidate to prevent confusion.
The remedy that the division has chosen is the most extreme possible remedy. Why not use one of the lesser ones?
The division's conclusion that the challenger wasn't a good faith candidate partly relied on an email he sent at one point, wrongly giving his middle initial as S. That's the senator's middle initial. Petersburg Sullivan corrected himself in a later email, but attorney Christopher Murray, representing the division, argued that wasn't an innocent mistake.
There's a lot of other letters in the alphabet that could have been a typo. The fact that he picked the middle initial of the sitting United States senator that he's purporting to genuinely challenge, we don't think that the division is obligated to not notice that. It's very, very troubling.
Justice Amy Orovic said it's fine for the division to notice.
The issue is whether that justifies booting someone off the ballot versus mitigating, which you're clearly authorized and empowered to do. So, there's a lot of different ways you can distinguish these two candidates on the ballot, short of precluding access to the ballot to begin with.
Monday's order, which was released about 3 hours after oral arguments concluded, was barely 100 words. The court says it will issue a longer opinion later. Dan Sullivan of Petersburg told KFSK yesterday he's glad the Alaska Supreme Court ordered his name to be on the ballot.
Well, it feels pretty satisfying. I have to say If they had ruled the other way, I would have been really surprised. I was maybe naive. I use the word naive a lot. Maybe naively confident. It seemed like I met the criteria pretty easily.
The Senate candidate said he'd felt confident during the proceedings. The Petersburg Sullivan maintains he's a genuine candidate, intent on pointing out what he doesn't like about the incumbent. But Senator Dan Sullivan's campaign rejects that assertion. Campaign spokesman Nate Adams calls the Petersburg man a sham and a fraud and says the court's ruling is disappointing.
That said, we are encouraged by the fact that the director of the Division of Elections will be able to use her expertise to best differentiate between the Petersburg fraud and the incumbent, Senator Dan Sullivan, ultimately to the benefit of all Alaska voters.
The case may not be entirely concluded. Petersburg Sullivan said yesterday he felt ready to start campaigning for the August primary, but was also waiting to see how his name will appear on the ballot, something the Supreme Court told the Division of Elections to decide.
And once that's done, then I can sort of start to move forward with getting my message out and moving forward with this campaign.
After yesterday's court order, the division proposed to list Petersburg Sullivan on the ballot with his full name and without his chosen Republican Party affiliation. His attorney, Jeffrey Robinson, said during the Supreme Court arguments yesterday morning that the state has no authority to strip him of his chosen party affiliation. The Alaska Board of Fisheries last winter passed several new regulations for Bristol Bay salmon fishery. The changes include measures in response to declining king salmon populations. But as KDLG's Jesse Sheldon reports, the regulations won't go into effect until mid-July, when the king run is nearly over.
Starting July 12th, commercial fishermen will no longer be allowed to keep king salmon for personal use. Christina Andrew is a commercial drift fisher and Dillingham resident.
As an Alaskan native, my family has been on this river for generations and fished this river for generations, to add an additional middleman to the system for me to eat a king salmon that I have an inherent traditional right to eat, it's just like death by paperwork.
The new regulation requires kings caught in commercial gillnets to be retained, which fishermen must then either sell or donate. Andrew says there are avenues for fish donations through processors, but she's still concerned about the added steps created by the new regulation, one of several passed by the State Board of Fisheries in January.
Then you're forced to turn that fish over to a processor who could potentially damage the fish and then trust that they're going to go and donate that to a local tribal organization and that it would benefit your community when, like, you're right there and you can make sure it benefits yourself and your family for keeping it.
Until July 12th, the existing king retention regulations from last year will remain in place. The current rules allow fishermen to keep kings for personal use, but still require filling out a fish ticket. Doug Vincent Lang is the commissioner for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And that regulation was passed by the Alaska Board of Fisheries, and it was, best I could tell, it was based on testimony, again, of a few fishermen who said, yeah, we don't actively report our harvest.
He says this underreporting of king salmon is the reason the new regulation was passed.
At the end of the day, we need hard numbers on what that removal rate is so that we can calculate the king salmon returns in total to the Nooshiak Drainage.
The Nooshiak River holds the most significant king stock in Bristol Bay. Incidental king salmon catch in the Nooshiak in recent years has been well below the 20-year average of 33,000 fish, with last year's harvest being the lowest in the last two decades. The regulatory changes are the result of proposals heard at the Alaska Board of Fisheries meetings for Bristol Bay in January. Anyone can submit proposals to the board. From there, approved proposals are sent to the Department of Law for review and finally to the Lieutenant Governor's office to be filed. But this year's regulatory changes weren't filed until this month, which is why they don't go into effect until July 12th, when the King Run is mostly over. Tim Sands is Fish and Game's West Side Area Management Biologist for Bristol Bay. He says that because of the delayed start, the new king retention regulations won't have much of an impact this season.
Because it's not going to be implemented until July 12th, most of the kings are going to have passed by then. So we'll see how much of a factor it is this season, and then hopefully we can really dial it in for next year.
Sand says he recognizes that a lot of fishermen want to keep their kings and that there are ongoing conversations about ways for people to still get kings on their plate or donate their fish once the regulations go into effect.
It's just a concern because a lot of people, they want to keep their kings, and finding a mechanism for them to make sure the kings are reported on fish tickets, but them still to retain the kings is something we've been working at.
In another effort to conserve kings, the Board of Fisheries also passed changes to the triggers outlined in the Nooshiak King Action Plan. These are escapement requirements that must be met in order to open the fishery. The new triggers will further delay the opening of commercial sockeye fishing to allow for more king salmon escapement. This won't be in effect to start the season, but Commissioner Vincent Lang says the department will be closely monitoring the run, and their actions may closely mirror those new triggers. Meanwhile, Fish and Game reminds fishermen that the reporting of kings kept for personal use on fish tickets is still required even before the new regulations take effect. Kimberly Johnson is the tribal administrator for the Chehuyung Tribal Council. She says meetings are ongoing with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to discuss how regulatory changes about king retention will be implemented and how tribal members can still get fish.
We've had several meetings with Fish and Game prior, like pre-season, trying to get ready for this and what it would look like. Our tribe has already received donations from Northline Seafoods for our elder giveaway program. We've done that for the last 2 years.
But Johnson is still concerned that the new regulations will hinder tribal members' ability to get king salmon.
For tribal members who don't have that opportunity to catch them on the beach, then it makes it really difficult for them then to do this extra step to get them into their smokehouse or get them into their freezer. And that was our biggest concern.
The escapement goal range for kings in the Nooshiak is 55,000 to 120,000. As of June 25th, just over 8,200 king salmon have been counted at the Nooshiak River sonar. In Dillingham, I'm Jesse Sheldon.
Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed nearly $500,000 from the state budget last Wednesday that would have gone toward efforts to retain and recruit teachers in Alaska. The Alaska Educator Retention and Recruitment Center began almost 2 years ago as a resource to support recruiting and retaining teachers in Alaska. Jennifer Schmitz is the executive director of the organization. She says its services include marketing teaching positions and helping districts with professional development.
Anything that has to do with recruitment and retention, and you say a district says, we need help with this, we are the people that help them with that.
Schmidt says they also support hiring teachers internationally, and the funding could have expanded efforts to support special education teachers hired from the Philippines. Districts have turned to hiring teachers internationally in recent years to address staffing shortages. Representative Rebecca Himshoop, an independent from Sitka and co-chair of the House Education Committee, says she's upset about the vetoed funding.
We are intimately involved with this budget, and then to have things sliced out of it every year is very, very frustrating.
She says the organization has been working on recommendations laid out by Dunleavy's Teacher Recruitment and Retention Task Force that met in 2020. Lisa Parody is the executive director for the Alaska Council for School Administrators, which runs the recruitment organization. She says the organization will continue to support recruitment and retention efforts, but that Alaska children will still feel the effects of teacher shortages.
Our children experience the consequences of educator shortage every single day, and we are committed to continuing to work against educator shortage.
Parody says the organization's board will meet to figure out which services will still be provided. Lawmakers have a chance to override the veto as early as July 1st. During the last weekend of LGBTQ plus Pride Month, Juno's drag artists put together a sold-out show at a new venue in town. People there said the show is a celebration of community, love, and resistance. KTOO's Alex Sullivan has more.
3 days of performances, 15 drag artists, bubbles, a giant rainbow flag, Cookie Monster, sequins, glitter, and glam. This is Glitz, Juno's annual LGBTQ plus Pride extravaganza. And this year, more than 300 people attended. It's drag king Ruben Strange's third drag performance. Dressed as Sailor Mercury, a character in the Sailor Moon anime franchise, Ruben Strange lip-synced, danced, and blew bubbles into the crowd to a song mashup of I Wanna Break Free and Fat Bottom Girls by Queen. Strange hung out in the lobby during intermission.
But it was great. It was amazing. I loved how I had a bubble gun, my bubble gun just everywhere, and people were just like having a blast with it, and that's my favorite part.
Offstage, Strange says she's a trans woman who came out at the age of 30, and she says Glitz means what Pride means to her.
It's this like out and loud megaphone of we are here, we belong here, we're not going anywhere. It is resistance.
Carly Lemieux spent Friday volunteering at the cash register, exchanging cash for dollar bills so attendees could shower the performers with tips. She says Glitz, to her, means community.
The people and the creativity and the love and the openness, and I'm like, these are my people, this is where I need to be.
She says she felt welcomed into the Juno drag scene. Juno drag is organized by local drag artist Gigi Monroe, who started Glitz in 2015. The show is filled with gender expression in the form of glamorous outfits, lip-syncing, and dancing. This year, it was held at the Aurora Grand Theater. The theater will officially open in July, but has hosted a couple of pop-up shows while undergoing renovations. Weaving through the plush theater seats, drag queen Aria B. Cassadine belts out I'm So Excited by the Pointer Sisters. She's traveled from Chicago to sing live at Juno's biggest drag event of the year. Cassadine has competed in drag competitions and pageants across the country. She was a finalist on RuPaul's show Queen of the Universe and won Miss Gay Black America in 2018. This is her first time at Juno Glitz. It's an audience member's first time at Glitz, too. Bethany Gasson is a life coach who has lived in Juno for around 18 years.
Absolutely, my biggest thing is being authentic to who you are. So for me, this is everything that I talk about.
Gasson says she's not a member of the LGBTQ plus community herself, but is supportive of family members who are. And in a flashy rhinestone jumpsuit, it's clear she got the outfit memo. In Juno, I'm Alex Solomon.
For Canvas K, I'm Taylor Heckert.